Welcome to episode 36 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June 3rd, 2012. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my fellow gamer, James Furlough.
Hey, good to be here.
Cool.
That's all I got.
I know it's a little early for the gamer stuff, and we'll talk about that in a few seconds, but, you know, E3 is in its myth, so let's talk about it a little bit. Talking about it. All right, this week, though, like every week, we'll be talking about the technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into it, want to have your short disclosure?
Yeah, so I still have a job with HP, which is nice. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of their opinions, so I should always say I when talking about things, and if I ever say we, I meant to say I.
Cool. All right. This show is obviously broadcasting live on YouTube as we speak, so go check it out. Which is weird, is if you're already listening to this being said, you're already checking it out on YouTube. But if you're listening to this in the past, or the future, as it were, check it out next week, because we'll be back here. It's pretty awesome. Other places to check us out throughout the week, though, you can go to Twitter, and my personal tag is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
The show Twitter is at Furlough Bros. That's kind of where our tech stuff is. We'll comment on that, and that's a good one to centralize yourself on. If you're looking for the big aggregate of everything, though, go to furloughbros.com. That's got all of our clicks and links and audio for all the podcasts and links to stories we're talking about. That's a great place to just get caught up on what happened last week in tech. You can also go to our Facebook page and Google Plus page and like us and Google Plus us and, you know, that sort of fun stuff. So check us out.
Yeah, and a little piece of news. Let's see, Tuesday, we are going to be having a special broadcast, doing a review of the E3 conference presentations, and we'll actually have some special guests with us, which will be fun to shed some light on their opinions of what the companies have said so far. And it should be a ton of fun. So we'll be doing that at 8:30 on Tuesday, but the podcast will be available to download just like normal. Yeah. And
I'm pretty excited about it because, you know, I think we're pretty unashamed in our admission that we're not nearly as big a gamers as we'd like to be or could be. You know, we don't have intimate knowledge of the games. We pay attention to the companies, but their games sometimes elude us just for time reasons often. But these guys put in the time, they do the research, and they're going to have our backs and be able to tell us what games are awesome, what games we should be paying attention to, as well as, you know, just what the companies are doing and more of this corporate opera stuff that we dig so much.
Should be good. So, and then definitely. We'll be back next Sunday on our regularly scheduled 8 p.m. broadcast.
Heck yeah.
All right, that's way too much administrative trash. Let's talk about some real news.
All right, cool.
So I don't know if this one's tech or not. Talk about, you know, real news. But the world's going to end.
Dun, dun, dun. Is that because of these zombie eaters and
just thought you should know that.
Popping up all over the world, or?
No, that's not actually the reason, though that could potentially be another good one. my dad was, our dad, I'll just call him dad. He was telling me about that, and I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, don't do bath salts, kids.
But this reason is totally different. It's more scientific than tech-related. Apparently, the Milky Way and Andromeda are on a collision course to
Dun dun
merge and
dun.
become one. And this is bad for the US, not the US, bad for the US. It's bad for
This is bad for America.
this is bad for America. Amertia. No, it's bad for the Earth, for the world, because obviously it's going to create different gravitational stuff, and as a result, it's going to push our sun away from us, and will make life living on here very difficult. Pretty
Oh my
much
God,
the end of the
terrible
universe.
news. Is this so is this like supposed to happen in the next 20, 15 years, or like should I start putting my things in order? Like
Oh, well, the answer to that is probably yes, because this is scheduled. The process of the merge is scheduled to start in 4 billion years and will complete in
man.
6 billion years.
Right as the sun is exploding,
Yeah,
mind you,
actually, they said the sun's going to move away, but it's not really a big deal because by then it will have already grown and started shrinking. And so the Earth will actually be uninhabitable before this happens.
I was gonna say it's gonna incinerate all life on Earth, so that'll be good times.
So there you go. The
You know what's?
end of the
You know what's?
Milky Way and us is here.
Yeah, it's rough. Gotta build those spaceships. So little known trivia. You know that pretty much there's actually like there's virtually no collisions when two galaxies collide. There's actually like there's so much space between all the planets that basically there's like no planetary collisions. It's just there's so much gravity that you just mix everything up and stuff. But
Ah, okay.
for the most part, planets just pass each other and get new orbits. It's pretty kind of cool.
That's significantly less cool, actually.
Yeah, when there's not fire and brimstone as planets cause. Yeah,
Dude, could you
I get you.
planets colliding, man? That sounds pretty crazy. But
It does sound pretty crazy.
I guess you, trusty listener, don't have to worry about it. You'll probably there would be something else that kills you before then. I killed that one, I guess. There you go.
Healthy dose of optimism. So,
So let's keep the optimism rolling.
speaking about the end of economies and whatnot, so this is it's time for your weekly rim update. We
Yay.
really, I know we say this every time, but we need a sound effect. Maybe one of those like whistles, the
I was thinking
things.
toilet flush, but whatever.
Exactly. RIM had an exciting week, made a lot of announcements, got a lot of people's attention. Basically, they announced that they're going to be firing thousands and thousands of people, and they're probably going to try to. They hired somebody to try to figure out how to structure a buyout. RIM's dying as. They're right. I'm pretty excited about
I
this.
believe somebody said that at the beginning of the year. Who was that? Oh yeah, that was me.
I believe the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast did predict that within the year they would be gone or bought out.
So what's really interesting about this is okay, yeah, they let go like wasn't it close to like 50% of their people? No, it was they
They
don't know. It
fired.
could be between 6,500 and 16,000. So I mean it's
Well. Yeah, the numbers are crazy. They're all over the place.
A lot, however you look at it.
Yeah, they yeah, yeah.
I mean, when HP announced their numbers, you're like, it's a lot of people, but percentage-wise, okay, reasonable. This is actually like a big percent. But what was fascinating about it is, they announced this, and then they say, yeah, we're bringing in whoever it is, JP Morgan, or one of those big banks to say, hey, we need help to restructure to figure out like what to do with all of our assets, which is never a great thing to have that conversation. That's the kind of conversation Kodak's having right now. Hey, we need someone to help us figure out what to do with all of our assets because we're like liquidating kind of. And I mean, they didn't come out and say that, but all of these big companies, they name a few of them, General Electric, the Pentagon, where they basically were BlackBerry only companies. And now, like, for example, the Pentagon, they just started this pilot program. But because of this news, they're just like, maybe we need to accelerate this because our devices may be unsupported in the very near future. And so it's kind of like they do this to save the company, but at the same time, because of the message they're sending, they could be dooming the company.
Yeah, that's the kind of – that was what the article that I read. It is the exact same thing where it's just like, this is terrible. This is like not the message you want to be sending. The message that they're trying to send is we're trying to figure out how to restructure to save it, and what we're actually saying is we're trying to figure out how to get the most value, which is really like, you know, and this actually tends to affect their you know, their consumer market less than their business market. But the business guys are like, what the heck? And there was quite a few people that were scoffing, saying, no, this isn't a big deal because BlackBerry, you know, there's just, you have to depreciate devices, and to have to switch to a completely new platform that fast would actually be, you know, could crush a lot of mid to large size companies. It just would be crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And then there were a couple of guys that came back and were like, No, that's not true. We could totally do it. It seems like it'd take 3 weeks and it wouldn't really affect the books that much for the year. Like, that was a threat. you know, just kind of a so the general opinion is let them go. it's a you know, they talk about dead company walking, you know. This is,
well, what's interesting about
it is happening.
These guys too, is, I mean, they're not a US company. So I mean, they're not going to get any U.S. They might get U.S. funding, but because our government's crazy like that. But but the chances of them getting it are significantly less. You know, it'd be up to the Canadian government to step in and help out a home team.
The biggest problem is that, you know, so many, especially federal departments, have opened up at least to the iPhone, if not iPhone and Android, mm-hmm. that it's like in both American companies, one American, you know, manufacturer. Well, and now they're both manufacturers, you know, and it's just one of those things where you sit there and you go, man, it would be incredible for the for America to step in right now and not just move all of their employees. Phones, all of their service over to Apple and Google, you know, because they'll have to ask the question, what's more expensive, you know, switching to a completely new platform or paying, you know, to keep BlackBerry around, a Canadian company? I think the answer is going to be, how about we switch over all of our, you know, employees? And I just think this is going to get uglier and uglier for Rim.
So here's my question. Let's say that you're JP Morgan Chase or Royal Bank of Canada, the two companies asked to go in and help out. Like,
yeah.
What advice do you give the RIM? What do you say, here's what you need to do to get out of this tailspin?
I don't think that's the conversation they're having.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think
they're literally saying, what can we do in the short term to make ourselves a good buy for somebody else?
Yeah, I think I definitely think that's the conversation that's happening, because it's a structural, because it's, the problem is that it's not a, we don't have enough money but we have good ideas. It's not a, you know, they've had plenty of time to, they've had 5 years to respond to the change in what consumers want, what businesses want, and they haven't. They've only dug themselves deeper and deeper into a ditch. And I think the only reason why they are even putting on the public face of we're talking about restructuring is so that they don't lose companies or lose buyers and people who are using BlackBerries. That way they're worth more when they get bought. That's it. I really think that's the long and short of it.
Wow.
You know, because I think structurally, like, you know, and I remember when the iPhone first came out, and this was just such an interesting comment to me. You know, granted, it was through a friend, not somebody actually working at BlackBerry, but he had had quite a few conversations with a close buddy of his who did work for BlackBerry, and when his friend's comment was, the problem is that there's nobody here creating something new. It's just, how do we take what we have and expand it to new, bigger markets, which is, you know, the quintessential, this is how you lose a monopoly. They had a monopoly, and they lost it, and they lost everybody who had started to create the monopoly. And so you end up in this place where it's just like you can't respond, you can't create anything new, and they at this point they just have a massive stockpile of phones that nobody wants. And and they're just trying to like, what do we do with those? How do we get those into, how do we not just lose ourselves on, a stockpile of, we've already paid for them. How do we not lose everything? I think it's a lot of questions like that, because the answer to how do you survive in the new market is fire all of your design guys and get somebody with vision, which they're probably already working for Apple or Google. Sorry,
Yeah.
Or Microsoft, really, because even Microsoft at least has a new vision. And time will tell how they execute on that, but at least it's something different from what they were doing. And whereas BlackBerry's not tried anything new, and it's funny, and to me, that's the reason why I take so much glee out of this whole thing. There are other. It's like Kodak. I don't know. I don't get the same sort of glee out of Kodak collapsing as I do with RIM. I think it just has to do with a very every turn they take has every step forward they take. It's just clear that they do not want to create something new and awesome. They don't want to create an exciting new piece of technology. Or if they do want to, they just don't have anybody who has any idea what that means.
Well, it's
And so
weird.
it's
It's
like,
almost like they've got their niche, right? The
right.
secure email, gimmicky keypad, whatever. They've got that. But their problem is, and maybe this is why they're cutting a ton of people, is that market is actually shrinking.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be this market, and the question really is, they're a big company made for a big market. Can they shrink down to the size company where, you know what, maybe they don't need to do major innovations. They just need to keep this sucker, secure and whatever.
The
And
only thing
functional, and
is,
just go, yeah, we're a smaller company, it's a smaller market, that's the way it is. And in the background we're working on something, a different division that's gonna be 5 years from now, and that may or may not turn into a business, doesn't matter. And we're just gonna be content being a smaller company now.
the only thing is, and it my you
Whoever
know that
says
I'm
that.
I know. Well, yeah, really. And maybe that's a valid argument. Maybe that's what'll happen. But I think the biggest problem is that they've got this, they keep claiming we're here for people who need secure emails, who really value security, and want a physical keyboard. The problem is that like a quarter of Android phones have a physical keyboard. And as far as security goes, they're really not in a position anymore where it's like they don't have the stability of their network. Their network keeps crashing, and they keep coming up with excuses. But you say like you sit there and you go, Facebook crashes less than you. Let's be real here. And Facebook has more of a ha, is less important and has more traffic. Like, what are you guys doing? Like, you have to. They don't matter, and they can handle 100 times as much data as you guys can without crashing. Whereas you guys, you actually matter. You have less traffic to worry about, and you can't keep it up all the time. Like, to me, it's just you sit there, and when it comes to that sort of security, vital communication stuff, like, literally, you don't get a chance. I'm sorry. Like, Google Gmail, to me, like, they had that big email delete where they lost their
Yeah.
emails, and it was like, to me, it like freaked me out because I was like, I can't afford that. And then Google came out and was like, actually, we have a complete hard backup stored in Iron Mountain or wherever it is. So give us a couple days and we'll all be back online. Sorry for that. You sit there and you go, that makes me nervous, but and at least they had a backup plan. Whereas and BlackBerry, to their credit, they haven't lost any data yet, but they're also not in a position where, Gmail is still in its quote unquote beta form when that happened. So it's like, I'm willing to evaluate it differently, but that sort of like just it can not ever break down. And and from a security perspective, they're actually not the forefront of the community. They're good, they're very good, but it's not like they're the greatest. And it's not like you can't get a you can't build security into an Android phone, close down what your own Android is doing. And furthermore, even at Apple has realized that that was the biggest problem that they're going to have, and they started hitting on higher levels of security, better security protocols, better security design from the second OS version, and now they're on iOS 6. And I got a feeling that if you were to really sit down with a securities expert, they would say, yeah, BlackBerry might be good, but it's like Apple's like 90% of the way there, and Android could be 110% of what BlackBerry is if the right person, if they decided that we need to make an investment in creating a closed Android security system. You know, it just to me, it seems like they, you know, they've been given a lot of credit and there's not actually a lot there. They're just really good at marketing themselves, you know, which is the quintessential criticism of Apple, right?
Not so good.
Right. But, you know, I don't know. They're collapsing. They're, you know, I think we're seeing, and I really do think that they might have some honest conversations about what could we do to stay around, but I don't think that that's the majority of the time that they're going to spend talking. You know.
Okay.
I don't think there's a need for a niche physical keyboard with decent security. You know.
All right. Wow. You are. I tried to bait you into defending them, and it did not work at all. Instead, I got the rant for why they're dead.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is supposed to be my short article, James.
Wow, nice. So, let's talk about something that's trying to be the next generation thing, but I don't see it. I really don't. It's cool, but I just don't see it. So, let's see, what's their name? Google has launched their next version of the Chromebook.
Nice.
So I wish I could run this latest software, but my Chromebook is too old for it.
Your free Chromebook.
Chromebook. Yes, that's right. It's too old, so I can't actually test this out to see how cool it is. But I'm just from the sounds of it, it looks pretty cool, and it sounds like they've released some new hardware to go with it. Which the biggest perk of the hardware is that the trackpad actually works on this new computer.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. So, so some of the things that it has is you could do these multi-windows now, because you couldn't do that before, and the UI will scale from, you know, different screen sizes. It actually has like a home screen, kind of like a desktop metaphor, I guess, you know, with a picture. And then you kind of have app launchers and everything that you can pin to the launch bar. But it's still just a browser, and that's it. They just kind of made it look less like a browser. Or think of it more as like it's an operating system where all you can do is open up a browser. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you can customize your backgrounds. I guess you couldn't do that before. You can view, now this is kind of cool, you can view like Office files, both online and off. And they give you like a dozen file formats. They got Google Drive support, which I think, you know, that's all part of it.
I was going to say, I think those two things are closely related.
you can do your Google Docs offline editing. And so you'll be able to do that. And then they've also got a media player and a built-in photo editor and uploader. Which are also, I would say, you know, standards of their computers. I mean, honestly, it's one of these things that I look at it. And I really, really, really want to like it, and I like the idea of it. And I just don't see it taking off. It's this kind of thing competes against an iPad, and
yeah,
this just, I don't know. Maybe price is a consideration, maybe, but I mean they're relatively closely priced, and you just sit there and it's like, okay, I can have a computer that has a browser and that's it, or
a photo editor.
It's kind of okay. Photo editor, but you know, it's primarily a browser where you'd have to do everything in the browser, which is, you know, they point out accurately you can do a whole lot of things in the browser, which is cool. But it's like, or I can have this device that also has a browser. Now granted, it doesn't have Flash, which it sounds like they figured out how to fix the Flash and the whole Netflix thing, so that works on the Chromebooks now, which is nice. But, I mean, it's one of those where it's like the iPad's got Netflix, it's got a bunch of apps, it does have a Safari browser, which, you know, does work. I just, Good job, guys. Keep trying, keep building. I'm not 100% sure what their vision is for this. And I don't know where it's going.
It's funny. I think if Steve Jobs had had his way, I think if Steve Jobs had the original iPhone was only the front page of apps, and then all third-party apps were built in HTML5 through, you know, just a bunch of internet apps,
yeah,
which is what he originally wanted, and like I was like halfway through iOS development for iOS 2 that they finally changed one of his flip-flops, if you paid attention to Tim Cook's talks earlier this week. Mm-hmm. If the iPhone, iPads had stayed that way, yeah, I think they'd be perfectly suited to compete against each other. Because then essentially that's what the iPhone is. It's got a couple of built-in apps that are custom built by Apple, and, you know, and then a browser. But by giving you the capabilities of a rich dynamic language that allows you to get all the way down to hardware capabilities, it's a totally different platform, and it's one of those things where, yeah, it's like I can't understand why you would get a Chromebook at this point over an Android tablet. You know, if you wanted to stay Google centric, like,
I mean, well, what's the motivation? To me, it's like it's fundamentally it's a software group, and so they came up with a software solution that could run on the most bare bone basics of hardware. You know, and that was their thing. And so they were like, you know, that way we can focus on the software and do the software because that's what we're good at and that's what we know. And so that's what they created. And, you know, and one of their things was like, it's just browser. It's got all this other stuff that you just don't need. And, you know, and you can do everything. And now, you know, Microsoft is coming out with Windows 8 and they do a blog post where, like, we can start up the operating system in 8 seconds. And they talk about how the problem is people used to be able to press, like, you know, F1 or, you know, F3 or whatever during the startup to go to, like, the BIOS or, you know, interrupt the startup. And they're like,
yeah,
you can't do that now because it's just too fast. And so they had to come up with some sort of creative other solution to enable people to do that. You know, they made this, you know, really long blog post talking about how, you know, oh, we're so awesome. We made a startup so fast. You have to come up with another way to do it now. And we have a solution and it's awesome. You know, which is cool. And so it's like, all right. So one of their arguments was you just wanted a lightweight machine and, you know, that didn't have all the other stuff. It was just a browser, which is what most of us use anyways. And Microsoft's like, our starts up pretty darn fast. We've got our Metro style interface with a web browser built into it. Okay.
What else do you want?
And now you go, okay, well, let's talk about price. And it used to be, well, you could get a MacBook Air for $1,000, and this, I don't remember the actual prices anymore, you know, for $500, $300, because it's subsidized or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like, okay, when it was comparing against the MacBook Air, sure. But now it's like, you know, Microsoft, once again, even when they had Windows 7, they're like, oh, you can buy a $500 laptop. It's going to do it. And it's those $500 laptops are going to run Windows 8, and they might only be the ARM, but they're going to run it. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where they're going with this.
So this to me stinks of irony. You know what this reminds me a lot of? This reminds me that the Chrome OS reminds me a lot of the Java virtual machine development.
That is irony.
Because Java started out as, started out as this, really it was a couple of people working at Sun Microsystems, and they came together, a couple of computer scientists. Sun's got just tons of money, and they're like, well, what do you guys want to do? And somebody said, I think that there's potential for this idea of a borderless language, a language that can work on any operating system. Hypothetically, it's totally possible. We'll write a virtual machine that will act as a virtual computer that will interface with this universal computer language, and we'll develop it and we'll try it out. And so they developed it for a long time, and nobody used it at first. It was like, what's the point of this? eventually it did start to garner some appreciation. Obviously people liked it, became a huge programming language. A lot of people learn it. It's used in a lot of niche areas, but also a lot of app developments done with it. It's a very cool program. It's a very cool language, very powerful. But one of the big things that came out of Java development was not actually the Java language. It was the Java idea of the borderless language. And a lot of the concepts that they developed, that they wrote articles on, they published papers on, the computer science that they pushed forward with that was really the cool thing that they launched. And the big deal of that is that the Java technology that they were developing became the fundamental underpinnings for JavaScript, okay, which is now, how we program the internet. So, yeah, long story short, I think what it feels to me is that Google doesn't actually care if they sell any. They don't expect to sell any. I think what they're trying to do, and what they're having a hard time articulating what they envision, is this idea of, we're going to push something forward. We're going to push forward the idea of what is an operating system that only goes online? What is an operating system that doesn't have a hard drive? What does it look like? Because eventually we're going to get there where everybody does that, and we want to come up with a model. We want people to look back and say, oh yeah, remember when Google did that? That's why all of this, the rest, all the rest is like this. They want JavaScript. They want the legacy. I think, and that's what it seems like. There's not an expectation of success. There's an expectation of a legacy. We're building a cloud-centric operating system, and this is the basic architecture that Apple and Microsoft and everybody else will use one day. I think.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, maybe this is a platform for them to experiment with and see what other people do, and if they can figure out a way to make some money and get notoriety, they'll do it.
Yeah, well, I think the only reason they're selling it is to kind of hopefully become a self-sufficient to recoup some of the loss, so that there's some justification.
I wonder how many of Google employees use Chromebooks as their computers. That sounds like a Quora type of question.
What Quora? Oh.
So Quora.com. Here's a little ad for you guys. Enjoy it. It's a Q&A site, basically. So you can ask questions and real people answer them.
Let's see. Spell it?
Q-U-O-R-A. How many, let's only do one space. How many Google, I can spell really, employees use Chromebooks? Chromebooks. How many people use Google Chromebooks? No. That's not what I want to know. Google Chrome. How many lines of code is it? How many Chrome apps actually work with bookmarks? How many people work with Google Chrome? Man. I'm just gonna put that out there and let's see what we get.
Cool.
How many people use? No, that's dumb. Oh well. Maybe I should ask that question. I'll put it out to the internets. I'll write it down and come back to it later.
Cool. All
right, go ahead. Because I was just curious. It's like, you talk about dog fooding and, they're big into that. And, I just want to know how many people, actually use it to do their job. Because that...
Right. Because it makes a difference, You never want to work for a company that doesn't use their own product.
Which I feel like this could be one of them.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. It's a fascinating question. Probably depends on how much of a deal they get on them. it's not funny. cool. Yeah. So, moving on a little bit. Did you hear about the new things that you should be terrified about this week?
No. What should I be terrified about?
There is a new super virus. Woo! It's actually a worm, which is, constantly terrifying. But unlike, we talked a while back about the Conficker, which acts, it's a worm, self-propagating, doesn't require any user interference, interaction in order to propagate. But all it does is act as a portal. This one has a specific purpose, which is always exciting because it usually will tell you a lot about who is developing it. So this is the flame virus. It's cropping up all over the world. The U.S. has basically warned people, hey, this exists, so be wary. Basically, what it is, it's a device that turns your computer into an eavesdropping device. What it does is it the worm will get into your computer. It's capable of taking screen captures of what's going on. It can record audio of through any microphones that are built into the computer. Take video. It can take keystrokes, record keystrokes, which this is not necessarily new for a virus per se, but one of the big telltale signs of what's going on is that it's specifically kind of targeting certain regions of the world, countries that it's more prevalent there than elsewhere. It's more prevalent in countries that America is not friendly with than countries that America is friendly with, which is interesting. And one of the really scary thing, well, scary impressive things about it is that it has the ability to activate Bluetooth, the Bluetooth antenna on your device, and can sync with mobile devices that get within range. So if you've got your iPhone in your pocket and you walk up to your computer, your buddy's computer, and his computer has this virus, it can sync with your iPhone and steal all of your data off of your iPhone, which is
Wow.
pretty terrifying. Yeah, good times. It's an incredibly powerful device. And the general consensus is that basically people started to figure out that this thing existed, what it was, and so America or our government jumped into the whole, yeah, be worried about this, pay attention, protect yourself. And everyone's like, it's pretty obvious we made it. America's the only one that has like the actual system to track what's going on, all of the data that's being returned to it, wherever it's going. It's just an immense amount of data that you have to be able to search through.
Wow.
It's not Chinese enemies that are getting attacked. It's not Iranian enemies that are getting attacked. It's Iran. So it's just everyone's sitting there going, oh my gosh, can you guys possibly speak out of both sides of your mouth anymore? And what's really fascinating about this is that earlier this week, Stuxnet. Do you remember what Stuxnet was?
Yeah, but remind me quickly.
So it's last year the Iranian nuclear centrifuges were running. They're creating weapons grade plutonium. All of a sudden, they started to spin out of control, and they blew up the factory. And everybody was like, "Whoa, whoa, what happened here?" And so, when it kind of all came out, what it was, they determined was it was a computer virus, a rather terrifying one that managed to pinpoint a specific PLC, programmable logic controller, and it was designed to overrun centrifuges. So the obvious, like, whoa, where did this come from? Who developed this? Obviously not a friend of Iran's. And the general guess at the time was, like with the flame virus, that Stuxnet was an American-Israeli creation. And people kind of, were guessing about what it was doing, how it was doing it, why it was doing it, and the general consensus was that it was American, made in America. And this last week, it came out. This dude's writing a book, and he said, "Yeah, I have proof that Stuxnet was made by America, and got some crazy quotes. Basically, one of the big things that it was designed to do was to spread. They had all of our engineers that we have working on this sort of thing. They basically said, "Hey, what if we were to create a virus that I don't know, was to target a specific type of PLC and I don't know, overrun engines? Could we do that?" And and the engineers were like, "Why would we do that?" And the military higher-ups were like, "You don't need to know why we would do that." So without any knowledge of why they were doing it, they just knew what they were doing. They started to develop the virus. And once they figured out that the big trick for them was figuring out a small chunk of code that could actually activate motors and run it. But I guess a big part of this was that the factory with the centrifuges actually has an internal network that's they have it called an air gap, which is essentially, even though there's an internal network, there's no connection to the wider internet, so it can't, and then that's literally their firewall. That's how they protect themselves from viruses like Configure. I guess in 2008, we had managed to get a jump drive with a virus into the network, and so we were able to map it. Yeah. So, and this was under President Bush. We were able to map their entire network. We knew most of the computers on there. We knew where they were, what they were doing.
Wow.
So that's how we figured out what we should design Stuxnet to do. And then once we did that, we basically designed Stuxnet so that it went on a jump drive, and once it was on the jump drive, it would propagate throughout the network that it was on. And then what was really crazy was we needed a double agent, an Israeli double agent who was an Iranian scientist engineer who walks in, gives people these jump drives till one of them gets in the computer. Suddenly we're blowing up their factory. I mean, crazy double agent stuff. But what really gets scary about all this is that we found it all over the world. And so what the conclusion was that. Yeah, it was supposed to stay within this network, but somebody got it on their laptop and then took their laptop home for work and plugged into the internet.
Brilliant.
And just unleashed it. The only thing is that the engineers, there's some debate about whether or not Stuxnet was even capable of propagating over the wider internet, because they wanted to keep it within this one factory, so that once it exploded, all the evidence is gone, because computers are destroyed.
Yeah.
And so the only reason we know about it like we do is because of just how widespread it was. And so what they think happened was, once we handed over the package to the Israelis, actually went in and changed the assembly code to make it more aggressive, and that way it would infect somebody's laptop. Once they took it out, it would infect the rest of Iran. And the president and vice president are like quoted talking about this, whereas like vice president I know his name, I totally know, I don't remember his name.
I'm not gonna
totally
help you.
A brain fart right now.
Starts with a B.
Oh man, that's brutal.
You're talking about the current one, right?
Yes, the current one. So Biden is quoted like, ranting in the Oval Office about how this is obviously Israelis doing. They've gone way too far. Because the question is, like, once it's out there, it was designed for specific PLCs to do damage. But once it's out there, who knows what it can do? Like, who knows what, it was specifically a Siemens PLC. If they get connected to another Siemens PLC and it starts operating, you don't know what it's connected to now. If it's another centrifuge designed the same way, you'd have the exact same problem. But it could be in France. Who knows? Or it could just be connected to, something else, your valves, or it could be anything. But the point is, we don't know now. Now it's just out there designed to destroy things.
Love it.
Destroying things. Yeah. So pretty crazy. This is, just kind of a You know, especially considering the fact that it's stated American foreign policy that if anybody attacks us with has some sort of a cyber attack on us, you know, we're looking at you, China. we've said we will react. We can and will react with the full force as though it were an actual military
Wow.
strike. Which means if China comes over here and, you know, blows up one of our factories with some computer virus, we'll fly over with bombs. You know, which is like, and we're just like, what are we doing? Like, we're out and about blowing up factories in countries we're not at war with. You know, just, you know, it's good to be the big dogs, you know, because you get
Oh, man.
to, but jeez
Wow.
Louise. Yeah, pretty
That's
crazy.
awesome. Or not.
Yeah. Yeah, so talking about the end of the world, man.
Yeah,
This is
who cares about galaxies colliding?
our
Jeez.
right 4 billion years from now. So yeah, that's I don't know. It's yeah. That's where we're at. That's the state of viruses. You know, we thought Conficker was bad, and here we are. Like, I mean, it's terrifying because these are super viruses. These are things that just, you know, we, you know, that are designed to be really powerful and really destructive, and we're getting really good at, you know, designing stuff like this. And, you know, I make that joke about China, but it's like really, really, really well known that China has armies, legions of young computer engineers trying to figure out how to destroy networks and crush countries using their own networks against them. So, you know, it's not a just fun and games cool. You know, we're not the only guys out there with these weapons, and that, you know, that doesn't even, you know, count the fact that once Stuxnet is out there, once Flame is out there, somebody can figure out how it was built, why it was built, reverse
Yeah.
engineer it, and repackage it to do something else. And which is what happens to a lot of viruses. So, you know, there's 7 billion people out there. That's an awful lot of people that can do an awful lot of damage if they, you know, doesn't take a very big percentage for this to get really scary for the rest of us.
Man.
You know.
Well, at least it's not
So,
sentient yet. So until that happens, I'm not totally
yikes.
concerned. That's
Yeah.
The point in time where I go, I really don't care about galaxies colliding anymore. That's when it becomes bad. But I mean, there is this definite trend of escalation, so it'll happen eventually.
That's kind of optimism the Further Bros Tech
Oh
Podcast brings
man,
you.
we're doing great today. All right, I'm gonna
Oh.
lighten the mood then.
Sweet.
Good news. Good news.
Okay.
If you're a calendar junkie like myself, which I totally am. So I live and die by the calendar. And I tell my wife this, if it's not on the calendar, it's not happening. I mean, that's how it works. And in my family at least. And thankfully she lives by it. And it's I think there's only been like one time so far this year, so in the last 5 months, where she's forgotten to add something. But even then, it was still a week before it happened, and so I don't know if that still counts in the forgot. I wanted to schedule something there, and she was just like, actually, you can't, because there's. It's not. And I went, actually, I can, because it's not in the calendar. I didn't win that particular argument,
Say, I'll bet
so.
that went over
Yeah.
well.
So, when I heard that Google Plus Events is on the way,
Cool.
I got pretty excited. So I mean, there's already ways to schedule a meeting with people via Google Calendar, you know, so that's cool. But this is the beginning of what they talked about, not the beginning, another example of Google Plus being integrated across all of Google's different properties. And so literally all they have is a screenshot, and that's all that they know. It says that you'll be able to create events with your circles. Okay, like, you know, everyone in our circle, we could say, for the Bros Podcast, you're invited to the event, right?
Cool.
And then it'll show up on your calendar. You can add photos and videos to an event collection. Sounds dumb. Oh, schedule hangouts ahead of time. Perfect.
Oh, hey.
And you can discuss an event, make plans, or swap stories. Okay, cool.
So this...
And then they also say that, I guess, on the Google Plus Android app, there's a phantom button. There's a slot with nothing there. And they're like, this could be it. This could be it.
Yeah, or it's just dead it's pixel space, the thing. I don't know, just put a button there.
Could happen. No, I don't think so. But so like I said, I'm a total calendar junkie, and I schedule stuff with people all the time. I mean, I don't even know if you use Google Calendar, but I don't care. I'm going to send you that Google Calendar invite anyways.
I do use Google Calendar. Thank you very much.
Nice. So it works, which is what I like to hear. And I'm just going to broaden this a little bit more. I, for a while, used to say that or before I say what I'm going to say, you know, they were this article from The Next Web was very much like, hey, you know what? This is Google becoming a parody with Facebook because Facebook's got events, and now they've got, you know, events with Google Plus, and so they're, you know, copying Facebook. And that's totally wrong. I mean, in the sense that, okay, yes, Facebook has events, and Google Plus is now adding events, but Google has a calendaring service, and they're integrating it with the calendaring service. Facebook doesn't have a calendaring – that sounds so weird to say now – a calendar service product. What would you call that? Service? We'll call it a service. Yeah. And I've said that if Facebook really wanted to get into the hearts and minds of its people, you know, it's got this social thing built on top. Awesome. It needs to integrate social with productivity. And
we've been saying that for years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they came out with Facebook messages, and you're like, oh, a way to communicate. And that just kind of like, you know, now you have your @facebook.com, you know, email. And that kind of went nowhere pretty fast, I felt like.
Kind of went nowhere. I mean, like, that was – I don't think I've gotten an email. And I mean, like, I was excited about having my app furloughed. My Facebook address.
I know.
Was like, that's awesome. That's so cool. And just nothing. Absolutely
well,
nothing.
Well, and their whole thing was like, we want to reserve it for conversations and have all those other emails go to your old email box. And you're like, well, okay. And then it was like, they have events, but there's no calendar. You can't keep your calendar. And
yeah,
it was
you know
like,
what? I'll be honest.
Oh, go ahead.
I can say that's one of the biggest reasons why I don't use it is because it's like, people send events to me, and I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go to this event. And, like, I never – this is how it works. I never use my calendars on my desktop laptops. Like, it just – I don't. I only use my calendar on my iPod Touch.
That's fine.
And, yeah, well, it's fine, especially considering the fact that it integrates with Google's, you know, calendar service, which is why I use it. But there's no way for me to keep track of events through Facebook on my
iPod. That's not true.
What? It's not true?
I do it.
How do you do it?
Yeah, there's a I'm a calendar snob too. I mean, it's pretty bad. I mean, I could call myself a calendar connoisseur, but that would not be true. It's snob. Let's see here. How do I options settings? I actually think I turned it off because I kept getting invites to stuff, and I was just like, I don't care. I'll add you manually. But it was where is it? I don't see it.
Man, that's fine.
But there was this. If you do a search, it has to exist, or at least it did exist. Because I think I turned it off. But you could. There's a plugin that would take your Facebook events and turn it into the XML output or whatever that feed is called that Google Calendar could read and subscribe to, just like other calendars.
Oh, so I would have to sync my Facebook to Google Calendars and then have my Google Calendar sync to...
No. So it was just like there was this app that you could use on Facebook that would say, sync it with my Google Calendar, and you didn't put your
password.
Credentials or something like that, and then they'd give you... Yeah. The app would give you a link, and they'd say, just subscribe to this link, and we'll take care of the rest. And then anytime you accept or something like that, it would show up. And I think even if you, but even if you ignored them, they would still show up. And that was what started to bug me, because I get a bunch and I just ignore them. And I was like,
All right, Mr. Popular.
so should I.
Everybody wants me. I'm so busy I can't even pay attention to your requests anymore.
Well, whatever. So the point is, I think you can. They might have broken that since then, because I gave up on it. But I totally
I didn't
said
think.
that Facebook should do some sort of productivity thing. I also agree with documents, that they should get into the document space. And they've kind of got this document
Everybody's
thing in their groups, or and it's just it's dumb, or no one uses it, I guess. I don't know. And Facebook's like, we do social, we don't do productivity, which is fine and whatever. You know, we take pictures because
Oh,
that's
that's so
cool.
stupid.
I
'Cause
just
pro
so anyway, so all that to say, I use Google for all my productivity stuff. I use them for email. I use them, you know, we use them for this podcast with our documents, with the huddles. I use their calendar system. You know, also I use their contacts thing. That's a big one. All my contacts are
Oh,
synced with
yeah.
Google, which then syncs to everywhere else. So I use them, and you know, so now they're starting to add these social features, and I personally get excited about that. It's like cool, because it'll make it easier to invite people to things. I don't know. Maybe it'll just be
Yeah,
one
you
of
know.
those. It streamlines the invitation part, which is that'd be okay.
Well, you know, even if it's only a small improvement, it sounds like it'd be an improvement. I don't have, like I said, my biggest problem with the Facebook events is that it's like they don't sync with my calendar automatically, which evidently is wrong, but I'd be way more inclined to use, you know, a Google Plus event if it's gonna, you know, work with all my productivity stuff. And the cool part about the events is that it's much more dynamic than a 'cause all the calendar handles is an appointment, really. Whereas if you basically take, you know, instead of taking it as like making appointments more dynamic where they can hold more information, but rather actually create objects that are events, and one of the properties of the event is the appointment, the time at which it will occur. Yeah, that's pretty powerful. That's cool. You know, it's I definitely feel like that's a good direction for for Google to go. And you know, like you said, you know, I don't think it's so much that they're copying Facebook or trying to get, well, I shouldn't say that because I will contradict myself immediately. I think the goal isn't to get to parity with Facebook, but the reason why they're copying Facebook is because people understand what a Facebook event is. It's easy to understand, and what their event object is it's very similar, and so we'll call it the same thing. So people just what we'll say is we'll say the idea of an event as a thing that you create is so universally understood that why recreate it, you know? You know, and so it's although it's something different and it has more potential, you know,
Right,
and
they've
I
already got a
definitely think
bigger
it's the
background or backbone system to it.
exactly. And I think, you know, as far as Google Plus is concerned, you know, going forward, that's the right direction to move. So
Yeah.
it's cool. Cool. Awesome. So speaking of Google and kind of referencing back to the irony of Google Chrome, Google versus Oracle, case closed, everything's done.
Amazing.
And Google doesn't owe Oracle a penny.
Also
Which
amazing.
if you've been listening, yeah, I was gonna say, if you've been listening to this show is kind of not where we thought it was going to go. Of course, now everybody's coming out of the woodwork saying, "I obviously this is the obvious answer and has been the whole time." Anybody who knows anything knew that Google wasn't going to owe Oracle any money. Like, where were you like 6 months ago when everyone was predicting that Google would owe Oracle like $16 billion? Like, what's wrong with you people? So yeah, basically, what was decided? They went to trial. The trial by their peers, which is, you know, it's difficult to have your peers when you're a bunch of the smartest people in the world. But it was decided that Oracle or that Google had infringed on Oracle's copyrights, and that that, but the awards for damages was $0. So basically, it's, yes, Oracle was able to copyright it, but it constitutes fair use. And then the judge, I guess, came back out, like, later this week and actually threw out the patents completely. They're like, no, you just can't patent APIs. It's just not possible. Which is, you know, a lot of the people I guess I actually wasn't aware of how undecided this was. You know, like the whole Oracle buying Sun and the copywriting of Java and this being this proprietary language, like it just was such a, I felt like it was such a universally accepted thing. I didn't realize how hotly debated all of it was, this idea of copywriting APIs and what would happen when the first lawsuits actually came up. This one was pretty solidly decided. But what it basically means now is that anybody can create a Java virtual machine, because you're programming interfaces, as they were, application programming interfaces, which are like the if statement is one of the most basic of APIs, and Java obviously has a lot of really complicated, powerful ones that they've developed over the years. Those are the ones that they copyrighted specifically. But basically, what you can do now is that you can't basically say, okay, this list of commands will be our language.
And the rest of these are fine or whatever.
Yeah, and so basically, because Google didn't actually steal the Java virtual machine, they created I can't remember how to say it.
I don't know.
Starts with a D. But their virtual machine is actually a different virtual machine. It just uses the same APIs as Java. And so there was...
As in, like, for example, like, if Java had an if statement, they used an if statement?
Correct. Well, and an easier one to understand is...
Go ahead.
Right. An easier one to understand is it's like, in Java, if you want a list of data, like, you know, you want a list of numbers and you want that to scale, they have the array list is what it's called in Java, whereas in C++ it's called a vector. They do the exact same thing, they just have a different name and they have a different way to call it. Well, in Google's Java, in Google's language for Android, they called it an array list also. And basically, nobody used array list because Java had a copyright on, had a patent on that. And so the judge came out and said, you can't do that anymore, which means, guess what? Array lists are going to end up in C++. But the real concern, I think, for Oracle about this is that, isn't that C++ will adopt words and phrases from Oracle? What the real concern is that now somebody can create their own Java virtual machine, they can put it anywhere they want, and they can compile, as long as it's not the Java virtual machine, it just functionally does the exact same thing, that's legal now. It's just like, holy cow.
Though admittedly, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, but...
No, not at all, but Google did it pretty quickly. That's all. The real concern is that it's like, you know, and the reason why I actually went into so much detail talking about this earlier was because the very idea, it was foreshadowing, the very idea of Java gave birth to JavaScript, this powerful open source language. But all of that funding came from the internal use of Java and selling Java. Huh. And basically, if they couldn't justify that, they would have never developed it.
But we're good now. It's already been invented, so they don't need more. We're fine.
Exactly. What the problem is now, nothing like that will ever come about.
But we're good.
And the other weird... We're good. Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's
we already have... Yeah. Why protect a system that works? But, you know, what's the other really weird part about it is it's like the .NET platform. That's Microsoft's virtual machine that allows for cross-platform usability. Is there any reason for all of these cool software, you know, you get a bunch of apps on Microsoft, they start taking off, they get some special things. What's to stop Microsoft or from Google from developing their own .NET clone engine that will compile .NET programs. Let's take it a step further. What's to stop them from creating a virtual machine that will won't compile Cocoa apps, like iPhone apps?
Yeah.
You know, you could now suddenly legally build a phone that has three different virtual machines, one that runs Android, one that runs all iPhone apps, and one that runs
but
all.
I mean, but you got to figure out how to build the virtual machines, and they got to be at least a little bit different than the original ones, right? Because those are patent or copyrightable or whatever.
Those are copyrightable.
Protected?
Patentable. Those are protected, but it's not impossible, and it's, well, I shouldn't even say not impossible. It's, you know,
I mean, obviously Google did it with one platform already.
Right. Yeah. And they, like I said, they did it relatively quickly. And one of the big weird things about Java is that it's a very well documented virtual machine. There's not a lot of secrets about it. But the thing is, it's like, if you know what they're doing with Cocoa, there's no reason not be able to do it with Cocoa, which Cocoa, the language, is very well documented. It almost makes it easier to build a virtual machine that doesn't infringe on Apple's patents, because you have to write it from scratch. But it doesn't mean you can't make one that does the exact same thing, that creates clone applications. It'd be hilarious
and make one where you pull it and it does something totally unrelated.
That'd be very useful.
Prank.
Yeah.
Oh, you wanted to make a phone call? Don't think so. Just wiped your memory.
Everything just wipes your memory. It actually compiles every application, but it does wipe your memory at the end of every time. I don't know. So it's a fascinating little debacle we've gotten ourselves into. I think from a principled stance, yeah, it makes sense that you can't copyright APIs, because then what's to stop someone from copyrighting C++? That's actually a really bad example.
But I know what you're saying.
But yeah, what's to stop? You know, basically what it does is it creates a world where, like, you can do that, and these very general computer science concepts, you can suddenly patent those. But at the same time, it also basically tears down any barrier between different platforms that made it financially advantageous for one platform to do it over another.
Yeah.
Especially in a world where computing can handle these powerful virtual machines, and so you can virtualize a completely different operating system on your other thing. And, you know, it's like, how different would the world be if Apple back in the 90s could have, 80s and 90s could have built a virtual machine that ran every single Microsoft software, you know? And I don't know. It's just I don't know if it's going to change a lot, and I think what it'll do is long-term, it'll change how programming is done. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's like a horrible thing, but it's very, very fascinating, very, you know.
What it means, which is your chagrin, is that Android's going to keep going on. You're not going to see a sudden crash, which is what you enjoy watching. That's your true source of disappointment right there.
That's really, really insightful. As a matter of fact,
it's not that you have anything against Android. You just like watching the crash.
I enjoy that pain and suffering.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, oh well. So, I'll attempt to lighten the mood again.
Yeah, sorry about that. Keep pulling us back down.
That's okay. It's all right. It's all right. You know, we got to have these themed shows, and we're good at them. Last week was fireworks. This week, it's the end of the world. So, you know, whatever. Amazon is bringing their instant video to the Xbox 360.
Ooh.
Yeah, I kind of like it. They're doing the Netflix route, you know? It's, let's put this thing on as many streaming devices as we possibly can so that you can watch it anywhere and everywhere. And, you know, and people will start to pick us because we're everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Some of the cool features about this one that I like is that it's integrated with the Kinect, so you can whoosh movies and, you know,
nice.
Use your appendages, yell at it, I guess. Watch this one! Does that. One of the bad parts about it is that it requires a Prime account. And
so what
an
is
Xbox
the Prime
Live
account?
Gold subscriber, which is pretty much anyone with an Xbox, so, you know, whatever. Do you know anyone who legitimately owns an Xbox and doesn't have a Gold account? Exactly.
I'll be totally honest. I've, like, never asked anybody about what kind of accounts they have, so...
That's because they all have a Gold account, trust me.
Okay, all right, cool. So what does a Prime account, other than the ability to watch movies on your Xbox...
Well, let me click on this link right here that says, learn about the benefits of an Amazon Prime membership.
Cool. This is important, because I live in a household where there is a Prime account.
Yeah,
that we
so this
use.
Is but this is weird though. The education one does not count. For
I don't think we have the education one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think our mom has like the full real one.
Oh, it's mom. Yeah, she would.
Yeah. We ship so many books, and they like don't charge any shipping when we have a Prime account.
That's true because it's just $79 per year. After your 30-day free trial, you get free 2-day shipping on millions of items. There's
Boom.
No minimum order size to get that free shipping.
Oh.
And you have unlimited streaming of thousands of movies and TV shows that we already talked about. Oh, and this one's actually really, really cool.
My life?
You get the – if you have a Kindle, you get to use the Kindle – how do you do it? They call it a Kindle book. I didn't know that. That's new to me. So you can use a Kindle book. No. I'm just going to read this sentence to you. A Kindle book
thanks.
To borrow for free each month from the Kindle owner's lending library. That is a horrible sentence, Amazon, just so
it's
you know.
Awful.
So let me explain this to you. If you're an Amazon Prime person, you can borrow books from their lending library. And then it just means you can do one at a time, and when you're done, you return it, and then you can borrow another one. So for someone like me who only reads one book at a time, it's awesome.
Yeah, that is cool. That's very cool. I actually, why have I not?
Oh, they have Amazon Mom. Maybe that's what she is. They have Amazon Student, Amazon Mom.
I doubt that. I think she just has the regular old Amazon Prime account.
Let's see here. Discover how countless families are trying up their lives. Do you need you get 20% off diapers and wipes?
Oh,
subscriptions?
Yeah, that's probably not our mom.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's the only other advantage you get. I think the student one, if I remember correctly, it's like it's free if you have a .edu. Don't you?
Yeah.
Join Amazon Student and get... Oh, wait. That's free 2-day shipping. Congrats, graduates. They don't really tell you much. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here we go. As well as exclusive offers, there is no cost to join. Not a student. You still may be eligible for a free trial. So, so that's Amazon Prime. It's a cool service if you read or buy a lot of books off of Amazon. I don't, so I can't justify the $80 a year. But all that to say, now if you own an Xbox and you're already plunking down the, whatever it is, $50 a year or discount, which you probably should have if you're listening to this because they give them out all the time and you're savvy like that, you can now watch Amazon Instant Video. So the way that this works, it's similar to iTunes. You actually download the movies to the Xbox and then it'll play it for you. Does that make sense? It'll stream it, but it's not Netflix style, subscription style. You purchase the movie, your TV show, and then you can stream it once you've purchased it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No. I don't really understand. I thought you said like you had access to a bunch of, if you had a Prime account, you had access to a bunch of TV and movies. Is that not true?
Well, now you got me doubting myself.
Okay.
Okay. Here, let me hold up. I'll start clicking on links. See if I can figure this out.
This is an awesome. Awesome show right now.
We're diving deep.
Information packed.
How do I? Oh, I don't even know how to do this. I'm not going to start a 30-day trial to find out.
Maybe we should. Okay. How about this? How about if we think it's really important, we'll talk about it next Sunday. Because I don't know how important
unlimited instant videos. So, okay. Unlimited streaming of thousands of movies and TV shows. Sorry, I lied.
All right.
I guess since I'm not a Prime member, I don't get unlimited. I have to actually buy them per...
I gotta get an Xbox 360, man.
Dude, no doubt. I would love to get one, but it's not in the cards for this household.
Yeah, see, I've only got my Wii, and, you know, I still haven't set that up with Netflix. I keep forgetting to do that.
You know, I don't have a television anymore, so it really doesn't matter either way. Yeah, which was I wanted an Xbox, and my wife is like, that means we have to buy a television, huh? And I went, yeah. She goes, yep, not happening.
Oh, bummer.
Well, because then yes. I was like, you know, if you got a TV, then you got to have a sound system. If you got a sound system, you got to have a DVD player so you can watch movies. Well, not really, because you just have an Xbox. But then you got to buy the DVDs to watch.
Right.
But not really. You just get an Amazon Prime account, and you can stream it. And let's just say that she was not a fan of this route that we were headed down. And so I won't be getting it. But anyways, fair. Amazon fair Instant Video on Xbox 360. It's pretty cool. I like what they're doing. I like their plan. Spread it to the world.
Yeah, definitely. It's cool. Checked it out. So I read an interesting op-ed this week. Talk about pictures versus vision.
Picture versus vision.
Yeah, okay. It's basically talking about the difference between our two favorite big-time tech companies, so Facebook and Google. And one of the big things that they talk about is this idea that, and we talked about this back when Facebook bought Instagram, but they threw a couple numbers out there with this one. Let me pull these up because it was pretty interesting. Basically, they said Facebook is about pictures. Facebook is like about nothing but pictures. They upload some ridiculous number. Great, there's no numbers, just popping out at me.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Well, it's like an average of like four. Oh, here we go. It's users uploaded around 250 million photos every day. For context, around 480 million people use the service on any given day in that span. That's like ... quad ratio. That's basically a 2-to-1 ratio that, you know, in on any given wow. day out of every two. Yeah, and so it's just like when you think about it in the context of like.
So half the people using Facebook are uploading a photo. Well, probably not, yeah. But who uploads just one, really? I guess I do,
right.
Because mine's connected to Instagram. Anyways, I'll stop talking. Go ahead.
Yeah, but this idea that you know, over... Well, the thing is they're not adding 480 million users a day. That's just their average number of users. But they're adding 250 million photos a day. I mean, they're adding so many... photos, it's unbelievable. And what this dude was arguing is basically that what Facebook understands is happening to them, and you can see it in the release of their pictures app, the purchase of Instagram, just kind of how they treat their service, that they're a photo sharing site with a network or a social network underpinning, that's what they do, is they do photos. And so the idea of anybody else coming in and taking their photo, you know, their photo preeminence, it just freaks them out, hence the purchase of Instagram. They cannot let that happen at any cost, because right now that's what is their big thing. And in the future, yeah, like as they move forward, they see that as a huge part of their strategy, and you know, they dwarf everybody else when it comes to that kind of upload. So pictures being a big thing for this, but the other you know, side of the coin, Google, his thought was that Google is obviously putting a big preeminence on this idea of vision, pictures being what, you know, what it is, but Google is really wants to get into seeing things. You know, their whole Google Glass project with their heads up display stuff and trying to get this idea of, you know, getting in between your eye and the world that you see. And they do that in a couple of different ways, you know, and they talk about the idea of like virtual reality stuff, but even what the cars are doing, they're automated cars, and this idea that the cars can see and they have a vision of what the world is. Not necessarily like in a literal way, you know, not this idea of like, oh, they can see where they're going as a company. No, like they can literally just see the road. And in a way that, you know, is different than what Facebook is doing. And what one of the things that really struck me through this article, and I thought it was interesting, and the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because photos are unique in that they have a huge amount of data, but they require a huge amount of data. But because of just advances in how much data we can store and how quickly we can analyze stuff, that they've become easy to share, load, download, upload, keep on devices. You can have a ton of them.
Yeah.
And so what you're starting to see is this idea, in my opinion, is that there's this real thing of storing tons and tons of images, but also understanding images. You know, it's like the auto face detection type stuff. You know, that is becoming popular amongst, you know, different cameras and different services and stuff. But it was just as, I don't know, it was, you know, we always ask that question of, you know, we try to ask the question of what's next? What's the big thing that's coming down the road? And, you know, we talked about that recently, but I think one of the things that this article talks about, and I was inclined to agree with him afterwards, was this thing that, you know, this idea that what we're going to see the next decade really be about is the idea of seeing the world around us and understanding it. And taking a lot of pictures and sharing those pictures. It's going to be a very photo-centric decade as far as technology is concerned. And not necessarily video-centric yet, but definitely photo-centric.
That's where I want to get. I want to get the video-centric.
Yeah.
But we'll get there.
Hey, man. You got to take it one step. Well, the thing is, the difference between a video and, you know, it takes you 10 seconds to download a super high resolution picture. It takes you an hour to download a super high resolution movie. You know, I think when you get to, you literally, when you can download movies faster than you can watch them in super high definition, then, yeah, I think we'll be to a point technologically where we can have this sort of discussion of how do we intelligently deal with this stuff, uploading, downloading, and analyzing. But we're suddenly there with pictures in a way that we're with text in the last decade, you know. And so it's a fascinating little thing, and I think you're going to start to see a lot of unique innovations in the world of pictures, especially from these big internet centric companies in that realm, you know.
Yeah, totally. Beyond just the LOLs.
being put on. The lol cats.
Yeah, those are funny. Yeah, the other thing about like video is, you know, with a picture, you can consume it in half a second, and you get the message that it's trying to convey. With video, it usually takes a little longer to convey whatever the message is.
If I had to estimate, you know, a ratio of like information intake, I'd say that a picture is worth like at least 1,000 words, you know.
Yeah.
Just an estimate.
Just ballpark.
Sorry.
Nice. That's bad. So, yes.
Sorry.
That happened. Yeah. So I don't even. Oh man, you totally threw me. That's awesome. So pictures, yeah, they'll be cool, and then we'll start getting ads all over them because they'll know your location and context and hey, whatever. All right,
it is what it is.
So I read this article on a Psych Central, not your typical tech news site. But it was talking about how computers learn to assess emotions sometimes better than humans. And it says, in what sounds like science fiction, MIT researchers have determined that computers can distinguish if a person is smiling from delight or smiling because they're frustrated. Moreover, researchers say that computers programmed with the latest information from this research do a better job of differentiating smiles of delight and frustration than human observers do.
Interesting.
And then here's where it gets a little more interesting. Two more paragraphs, maybe just one. Researchers believe that findings could pave the way for computers to better assess the emotional states of their users and respond accordingly. Software could be developed to help train those who have difficulty interpreting expressions, such as people with autism, to more accurately gauge the expressions they see.
Interesting. That'll make the show The Big Bang Theory a lot less funny, but that's cool. I like that.
So I read that, and I'm like, helping people with autism? Whatever. Let's help out some video gamers. Yeah, see, exactly. What if you took this technology and, you know, you got your Kinect's little camera thing and it's watching the player, and the player's like smiling from frustration. I don't get that.
Yeah.
Who smiles because of frustration? Whatever. Anyways, clearly I'm not as smart as a computer on this one because I don't even get it.
Well, that's like the... I got a situation. It's like somebody's like... Or... No. It's like let's say you've been you got shot down by your boss at work, and you know your idea is better, but you like you can't like go off in a huff. So okay. You're really frustrated, but you smile like that. All right,
fair enough.
Great.
Fine. So a video game can determine that you're smiling in frustration. Let's just say frustrated.
Yeah.
Frustrated. And the game goes, oh, clearly this part's too hard. Let's dial it back a little bit with the bad guys. Let's have them die a little early or have a little less, whatever. Or they can see, hey, the computer can see, hey, this guy really likes, you know, this kind of challenge. Let's put him down that type of challenge track because we know the player will enjoy that a whole lot more. Or, hey, this person is now bored or something like that. Let's switch it up now unexpectedly to catch the gamer's attention again. And I just think that there's a ton of potential here, and they're just like, it could be used to help people. Like, no, it could be used to help gamers.
Well, so this is my first thought with that, and I think this would be really freaky. Like, let's say you're playing, and you're like getting really frustrated. Like, oh, this is so stupid. And all of a sudden, it gets really easy and fun. Like, oh, this is awesome, and you get excited. And then, that cycle starts to happen. You keep like, oh, this is so frustrating. And all of a sudden, it gets really fun. You know, and eventually, you start to get really frustrated when it's anything but really easy and fun. And so you just start to get this like kind of, thing all the time, and you just get this Pavlovian experience. Yes. Of just people are always frustrated every time they play video games.
I suppose it could ruin video games where you're just, yeah, you're just stuck in this one move.
You look like you absolutely hate this experience. Oh, I love it though. It's so awesome.
So that's not happening anytime soon as far as I'm aware. I thought that was funny.
It would be pretty cool if it like was built into your heads-up display, though. You're like walking around. And,
yeah. Like, oh, this person's in a bad mood. Don't look at that.
Yeah. You're like, what's wrong, honey? I'm like, nothing. There's something wrong. Do do do. Oh, thanks, Google Glasses.
Walk away. Save yourself.
Exactly. Oh, man,
that'd be sweet.
So, cool. So. Kind of related news, two stories. One, Leap Wireless, which I don't even know who those are, but I guess they're a local carrier for some big market. I'm guessing on the East Coast because I don't know who they are. The point is they're going to start selling prepaid iPhones. So you buy an iPhone, you can buy for like $399, you can buy the original iPhone or the not the original iPhone, but the iPhone 3GS, which you can get for free if you have a contract with one of the big guys. We've been talking about this for a while, the idea of moving to prepaid iPhones. And so this company's just trying to kind of taking the leap. The article, they kind of worked up the economics and they were like, yeah, if you're in a local area, you pay for every byte, but it's pretty cheap. And if you're in the area of their service and you use, you know, X level of data, it actually makes a lot of sense. You can save a ton of money. Huh. And like we talked about last week, the idea of, you're basically, when you get those big, you know, when you don't go prepaid, when you get a contract, you're basically just taking out a super expensive loan for your phone.
Right.
You do pay for it. You just pay for it over a 2-year period. Well, this one is, you know, the quintessential. If you just put it on a credit card, pay it off like you would, you know, like you had a carrier, you pay it off sooner and you pay less. So you save money overall. So they said it seemed like a pretty compelling package, and you can get your iPhone 4S and stuff. So just kind of wanted to follow up on that. But the other really interesting thing is AT&T has announced that they're going to probably move to offering data-only packages. So no texting, no...
That's a while from now, right?
Yeah, yeah. But they've acknowledged the fact that they're like, we're not going to have phone service, we're not going to have texting, you'll just use internal services, whether that's, you know, your iMessages or Skype or Google, you know, whatever. And obviously that'll take some coordination with companies like Google and Apple. They'll have to develop, you know, because the phone app right now on the iPhone will have to turn into... You know, if you're going to be able to do that with your iPhone, that'll have to be some sort of voice over internet protocol service. You know, they're not otherwise. You know, why have it? But I think there's just been a lot of talk about that kind of movement, Apple moving in that direction, and so it wouldn't surprise me at all if you see that more and more. From the technology that Google and Apple are offering to support a data-only device, we're kind of doing with what they're doing with iMessages, where iMessages is data-only if it's iPhone to iPhone, and they'll just have to figure out some way to do it if for non-iPhone iPhone communication. So,
well, and what AT&T is going to do is they're going to make them ridiculously expensive. We're all going to laugh and go, "No way!" And we just get used to seeing the higher price. And then they're going to come out and say, it's 20% off. And we're going to be like, whoa, it's a deal, even though we're now paying more than we were earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch. That's what they're going to do. I'm a marketer. I know.
I will watch. And I believe you, because it's the only thing that makes sense. It's the only way for them to make any money.
I mean, obviously, they're turning into dumb pipes. And so, you know, everything's data. And so they're just, you know, they're going there. And like I said, they're going to do it when they don't have to, so they can set the price super high, have everyone scoff at them, and then they go, hey, but now this is your frame of reference.
You set up your straw man, as it were.
Yep.
So, cool. Go AT&T. hopefully it won't, you know, yeah. That'll be something interesting to follow for the exact reasons you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that kind of was talked about on Wednesday that I thought was fascinating was that Apple turns over their entire inventory every 5 days. So there's no product from when from when Foxconn closes the box, shrink wraps your iPad to it ends up at your storefront. You know, you're buying it. It's like 5 days.
No, that's not what that means.
No. Okay, what's not what that means?
What do you mean? So, inventory turns means how many times you completely refresh the inventory within the store. So it could still take them 2 weeks to get the product to the store, but then once it's in the store, it only sits there for 5 days.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
In the context of the article, not really. I understand what you're saying, but basically what they said
that's normally when you talk inventory turns, that's what you're referring to.
Right. They were talking – yeah, okay, well, then this is something interesting to talk about, because basically what they said was they have an inventory turn 74 times a year, which is, like, astounding, because most retailers only turn over their inventory 8 times a year, and the only company that actually does it faster than Apple is McDonald's. Which means that, according to what you're saying, which I'm not saying is wrong,
Yeah, I mean, look at how they do the math. They take the estimated number of they take your inventory number, because that's in your balance sheet, and then you divide it by your sales per year, and that's how you get your number. And the inventory is like stuff sitting in, you know, stores or, you know, factory.
Well, so this is high volume, low margin companies like grocery stores may have 12 or more inventory turns per year.
Makes sense.
So it's like, does it though? So if like food will sit in, it'll take them an entire month for when the food gets to the grocery store to when they like sell it.
Yeah, I mean, produce is a little different, but yeah, for the most part. Well, see, what I want to know, man. What I want
to
know.
Oh, this went from really cool to just disgusting.
so what I want, but I want to know is that, does that include like product launches? Because those inventory turns are, you can literally count them by the minute, right?
Yeah, they have an inventory turn every day.
It's once a day, and that's probably completely messing with this calculation here. Because they'll also have days when they're out of product, right? And so their inventory number is actually lower than what it should be, because their sales would be potentially higher on launch days and stuff like that if they had more. And so it makes it look artificially high. It's a math thing. I mean, Apple's not doing it on purpose to try to get a high inventory turn number. They just, you know, if anything, it's saying that they could sell more if they had more of certain products. Not all
That's
of them.
A stupid article then. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. I'm gonna move on. I don't want to think about it. I don't want
to
talk about it.
This is what happens when you rely on some sort of newspaper columnist to do math.
Newspaper.
That's the math.
That's why we have an engineer and an economist, and not just one or the other. So I thought it was cool. Turns out I'm wrong.
If it went from like literally Foxconn factory to customer's doorstep in 5 days, okay, that's impressive. And I think on launch days, yeah, they do that because they're literally air freighting everything around the world. And, you know, and so, I mean, yeah, and they probably don't make a ton of money on that. They probably break even. But then, like, in stores and stuff, dude, that's all shipped over on a ship, and it takes 2-3 weeks. At least that's how HP does it.
Yeah, I guess.
And HP's world class.
Didn't beat Dell. What?
let's focus on other stuff now.
Okay. Moving on. Like I said.
Moving on!
So Samsung built this is just one of those kind of funny ones, I thought. So Chrome, the new Chromebook's coming out, and not only do they have the laptop, they have the desktop models too. Samsung decided to build one.
Oh yeah, that's right.
We're gonna build this super little. We're gonna build this little box. We're gonna call it our mini computer. And you know, this is the Samsung that's like.
So once again, this is to run Google Chrome, right?
Yes.
Okay.
This is the and it's like they're being sued all over the world for copying Apple's iPhone and iPad. Like, it's just, you know, left and right, they're in these paddles, and they came up with this mini computer that's, like, the exact same dimensions and style as the Mac Mini. I mean, it's, like, the only difference is, like, there's this big center disk area on the top. On the Mac Mini, it's silver. On Samsung, it's dark, like, dark material. But the edges are silver, and that big disk in the center is black. Like, you have to take a look at
these pictures. That is unbelievable.
It's comical. It's just, it's crazy. And they're just like, what are you doing, Samsung? Like, you couldn't have put a fin on it and, like, at least, or, I don't know, not have the disc? Like, what are you guys even doing over there? Are you trying? They're like, seriously. It's like they're trying to get sued by Apple. It's just like, keep poking. Just keep poking. pretty funny. Pretty funny. Nice job, Samsung.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, who knows if they'll get sued.
I mean, it
or
almost
not
looks like
it,
a Photoshop job, right? Where someone took a Mac
really
Mini and put a Samsung logo on it and changed a couple things and went, this is a concept of what it could look like.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it looks like. It's ridiculous.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Samsung.
Nice job, Samsung. You know, you're getting a reputation, and it's not a good one. I'm just saying.
So I must be in like a productivity mood or something because I got another one. So Facebook, and this is cool. They've added how do you want to say it? Like administrative roles for pages. So pages are typically what brands or companies or whatever, you know. That's how they have their presence on Facebook. And the way it has been, like with the Furlough Bros page on facebook.com/furloughbros, you and I both have like 100% access, right? And I mean, that's just, you know, there's no, you can't differentiate it, which for a small organization like ourselves, totally fine. For a larger organization, say like HP, not so cool. And so, and Facebook realizes this and realizes that it's a really important part to brands. And so they're making it more granular where you can actually have different roles. So you can have a manager who can do everything. You can have a content creator who can create content. so pretty much anyone except for manage the roles. You have a moderator that can respond to comments, send messages as the page, create ads, view insights. You have an advertiser who can create ads, view insights. And then you have an insights analyst who can, want to take a guess, view insights. And that's
insights.
It. And so so it's cool is you can, you know, you can set up who has stuff. And then you can also schedule posts over time in like 15-minute intervals and stuff. So, you know, if you want to be like, you know, 24-hour presence type of thing, you can. You don't have to stay up all night doing stuff. But so I think it's cool that Facebook's going, you know what, these pages, they're, you know, they're valuable. Companies like them. They want more control over them so that, you know, bigger organizations can use them. Because ultimately what they're going to do is they're going to say, hey, you know what, you guys are all advertisers. Yeah, here, use our account, make ads, no big deal, because you can't mess with anything else. And they were okay with that. So I think it's going to result in them earning more and actually – visitors getting a better experience because they'll be able to have like, you know, here, you can be a moderator. You don't have to create any content. Just, you know, watch the page and make sure that it stays good. And so I think companies will be more willing to try stuff and experiment with it because they don't have to be the sole person working on it because they're afraid of, you know, someone else could go in and change the picture or something.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I like it. It's competition is a good thing. That's what I have to say about that. You know, Google Plus is doing stuff, Twitter's doing stuff, so Facebook's got to respond and somehow get their stock price back in the vicinity of where it was.
We don't have to do that for the next 5 years. Give them a break. Okay, well, they have to do it.
Why
in the next 5 years?
But... Yeah, what's up with the next 5 years?
I'm just saying, like, 5 years from now, I think they'll be doing way great. I don't think everybody's given a hard time. Like, just because they engaged in illegal insider trading so that they could bump up their price shares and everybody can make a bunch of money doesn't mean that it's a bad stock. Things are unrelated. I don't know why, but I'm still defending Facebook. they're making me wonder why, but I'm trying.
I understand. So I am torn about Windows 8. So I read stuff. Like, they've got their latest preview, which is it's their release preview. So this is, like, the one before it happens type of thing.
Cool.
And you can get it for 2 months before the real deal comes out. Ooh. No. Sorry, I lied. They had the beta 2 months ago, and now it's the preview. And they made a bunch of improvements, one of them being, like, they got new apps, they've just made it faster, they actually has, mouse battery low, that could be bad. They have a support for Flash, things like that. And you watch the video.
Support for Flash.
Well, here's what's crazy about it. It's been crippled on purpose. So when you're using it in a Metro style, you can only use it for certain websites like YouTube. Because they wanted to make sure that the experience was good, so they worked with Adobe to create a version of Flash that worked. And in situations where it doesn't work, they just said, no, it can't be used. So, for example, YouTube works, but RDO won't.
RDO?
It's a Pandora video competitor.
Oh.
It's radio.
Well,
without the
geez,
A.
This. Oh, right. Makes sense. This is going to totally irritate me because totally makes sense. It's actually a really good strategy. I'm kind of impressed by that. The thing is that You know how
no
much
compromises, Matthew.
Guff.
No compromises.
I know. I know. Exactly. You know what the thing is that Apple would have gotten chewed out horribly if they had said, like, yeah, we're gonna have Adobe make a site specific, and everybody would be like, so now you get to control what content goes where. You get to control, you know, your little walled garden. You're taking away our freedoms, and you know, you're the man, and not in the good way. That's funny to me. It's a good strategy. It totally makes sense.
So, you know, Full Flash is still available in desktop mode, so you can use it there. This is just their Metro style. So I actually, I had an older laptop, and I installed the beta version of Windows 8 on it, just, you know, just to try it out. And I'm hoping that it was just the beta version or something, or my computer's too old or something like that. Because it used to be an XP machine, so I mean, it's legitimately old.
Ooh, yeah. it's old, yeah.
And it was horrible. I haven't uninstalled it yet, but...
What was horrible about it?
Well, so, okay, for starters, it doesn't actually stretch my entire monitor on it. It's just a square. And I was kind of like, couldn't figure out how to meet my resolution. I don't understand. The resolution's huge too, which I think it was huge, and I just have forgotten over time. And so I'm kind of like, it's big and fuzzy as a result of it, which is annoying. And it's just kind of, I honestly don't get the whole, like, the switching between the Metro and the desktop is weird.
Yeah.
And because I want to be in the Metro because it's got the apps and, you know, and they're cool and they kind of work. But then, like, whenever I want to do something, like, I need to go to the desktop. But since there's no start button, I'm like, I don't know what to do. How do I? Let's say, they got a button. They got a link to IE, which is there. You're like, okay, cool. Because that's probably where I would start for anything. But it's like, if I want to, like, open up an app, how do I do this? It was just, and I mean, I get part of it's a learning curve, and eventually I will figure it out and how to do it, and I won't miss it, and I'll be like, I'm glad they got rid of that start button. It was so ironic, or something like that, Windows button. But I just, like, it's so different than what I'm used to that it's hard, and, like, switching back and forth between the two, like, I think I'll get it, like, when Apple first flipped their mouse so that when you flip up it goes down, and then when you flick down it goes up, you know, they reversed everything. Man, my life was horrible switching between a Mac and a Windows machine.
Yeah.
And there's still occasions where I go, wait, which way am I going? But for the most part, I got used to it. I mean, and it took me a few weeks to get accustomed to the jump back and forth and be like, okay, which mouse am I using now? You know, so there's things like that, and so I think I'll figure it out, but it just, like, man, I don't know how they're going to pull it off. I think if I were to get a new Windows machine, I wish I could choose one or the other. You know, give me Windows 7 or give me Windows 8 Metro.
Yeah.
But because when you combine them, it gets weird. Or I'll find that, like, I will figure out some way to turn off the Metro and just go desktop and not worry about it.
Yeah. I've heard that a couple people where, you know, my biggest problem with Vista, the reason why I got so you're well, there's two problems I had, and ironically, they're exact same problems that I'm hearing about Windows 8. My one problem was it was super unstable, especially the early versions. Like, the computers, the hardware that was being released with Vista was just crazy unstable. If you had one of the early computers from, like, the first 6 months, they just crashed all the time, and they never got better. Eventually, Vista did get better, but
man, I hate to be this way, but I know people within HP who, once again, HP makes these computers who, even 6 months down the line, still they get a brand new computer for work crash.
And with Vista. Yeah, see, I've found 7 to be unbelievably stable.
Like, I like 7.
I'm really impressed with 7. But yeah, Vista was just like, oh, what the heck. But the other thing that I got that really irritated me, it was like, you open up a file, and I always, when I open up my file folder, I go and I have it in the detailed view, and then I like to sort by type.
Okay. That's weird.
Pretty simple. What?
That's weird.
You say that was weird?
Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever. It's what I like, okay? It was they took that functionality out of XP, or out of Vista. I mean,
oh, weird.
They had it in XP. They have it in 7. They don't have it in Vista. You're just like, why would you take away that workflow option? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I used this. It was super frustrating, and until I got 7, I wasn't really satisfied. Actually, they fixed it in a service pack later on. Now that I think about it, but it was like, I just couldn't believe that for like the first like 8 months that I used the computer, like they just took that away. Well, everyone's like, what I'm hearing is like, you know, you get those early enthusiasts, the real Melvins that are like, are getting, what is it?
Mavens.
Mavens, whatever.
It's from the Tipping Point with Malcolm Gladwell.
Right.
It's a good book.
Well, so Melvin is a one of the characters of it's a meme, but he's the same thing. He's a really smart, kind of nerdy, like the guy who tosses up in class and just super obnoxious.
Okay.
Melvin the Maven. Anyways, you get these people who are really enthusiastic about it and want to learn the new workflow. But I think when you actually put in, what I'm starting to hear is that there are real concerns about when you put it in the hands of the average user, are they going to want to take the time to learn the new workflow? Or are they going to be like our dad who used XP for years and years and years, and then he got his new Windows 7 laptop and hates it because we can't do this anymore. Why would they take that away? It doesn't make any sense. And you just like, you got to understand that they did something different that's better. And he's like, oh, I hate it. And you're like, yeah.
Okay.
But
like our dad, they're not gonna have a choice, right? He wants to get a cheap laptop. He's gonna buy it, and whether he likes it or not, he's gonna use it and learn how it works.
Except I've heard him say quite a few times, and this is the real concern. He goes, "If I have to relearn all of this, why not just go and get a Mac and something that
because it costs $1,000 and he paid $499."
Yeah. Well, you know, you make a compelling argument. But you know, it's just it's an interesting, you know, but they're not, people aren't going to be happy, I think, is what it comes down to. People will buy it, and they'll probably be crazy successful because they're Microsoft.
Yeah, that's what they did with Vista. They survived.
Yeah,
and yeah, Windows exactly. 9 will be amazing, and we'll love it. And go like, you fixed everything dumb about Windows 8, which is why I still think they're gonna, you know, take the. I think the tablet part of it, just tablet, I think will be fine. I think this mashup is.
This is like really becoming a thing for them, though. Like, this is honestly becoming a strategy. Release an operating system, I don't know, call it Windows 2000 or ME, that everybody hates.
Well, yeah, well, then, they don't slap the beta, the thing, on it like Google does with their software.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the difference. They go, oh, Google TV, beta, we're good.
Yeah, we're good. But it's, but like, they literally, they, I mean, it's not just a, this is like happenstance. It's release Windows ME. Everyone hates it. Release XP. Everyone loves it. Release Vista. Everyone hates it. Release 7. Everyone loves it. Release 8. Everyone's gonna hate it. Release 9. Like, it's just maybe like I don't know. There's a little part of me that thinks maybe they should like just try to normalize it a little more. Maybe not have everybody. Maybe just have people mildly dislike it, so they like kind of like the new one. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a great strategy, but it just seems like a strategy.
Yeah. I'm excited for it to come out and try it on a real laptop, not an old junker.
Yeah,
I think I'll get
definitely.
A better feel for it then. So SpaceX Dragon returned to Earth this week.
Oh, baby.
And I think
pretty
the cool
exciting.
Part about it, besides the fact that it was the first successful launch and return of a private spacecraft, was it was unmanned on its return back to Earth.
Yeah.
Which, there's something about that where you're like, dude, that's cool. It's like it's like a big robot just flying through space, really.
Yeah, no, it's not just like that. It is actually just a big flying robot. It's really cool. It's really awesome. And, yeah, it took them a couple tries to actually dock with the International Space Station, I hear. But they
got
it. They made it. And they delivered the goods. They got their payment. And they flew back to Earth.
I also like that this was, like, pretty much almost 100% funded by people selling their junk.
Yeah.
I love that because the founder, or the guy who owns SpaceX, is Elon Musk, who was the founder of PayPal, which was bought by eBay because, that was what people used as their checkout system for selling their junk. That's
It's
cool.
crazy to think about. Yeah.
It
Don't
created a
forget about the fact
spacecraft
that.
that flew all by itself. I'm sure he
Yes.
got funding from
This.
somewhere, but you know.
No, most of it came from PayPal, for as I understand. This dude made so much off of PayPal that he built Tesla Motors, and he's also built SpaceX Dragon and is flying to the International Space Station.
Which is pretty darn
This
cool.
dude, I this dude is going to become our who's the guy with the silver goose? He's played by jeez, if I could remember
What are you
any
talking
names, it would
about?
be a lot better. Like
See, I immediately
eccentric
thought like Edison,
billionaire.
but I don't want to get your ire on me because you're
Oh,
gonna be
yeah, I was
like,
going to say, give me all worked up again. All angry. what's his name?
I have
Okay.
no clue.
He was in the Titanic, the main Leonardo,
DiCaprio?
not yeah. He was in a movie. He was the he played a dude. I mean, this is gonna take a couple steps.
Are you
Give me a
talking about,
second.
man?
It's the Spruce Goose, you know?
Yeah.
Who was he playing in that movie?
Who's the guy who invented the Spruce
Howard
Goose?
Hughes. He's gonna this okay.
All right,
So
there we
who's the
go.
guy who started SpaceX?
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is totally gonna be our like generation's Howard Hughes. It's gonna be awesome.
I like it.
Super excited for it. Yeah, that took me a little. That one sentence took me way too long to get to, but I got there.
It's okay. You're there. That's cool.
So, yeah, it's awesome to see. I can't wait to see the next launch. I guess it's crazy. It's gonna take them like they claim they'd be ready for a manned launch in like 2 years, but they have to like I guess the government has to sign off on that sort of thing. You can't just explode people into space
Huh.
without government approval. But and it's gonna and they, that's gonna put them back 4 years, so they're not gonna be able to launch till 2016, even though they'll be ready in
Oh.
2014. But who'd have thought that you need the government to say it's okay?
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Eh, you know, whatever.
I guess it has to do with the fact that it's like a ballistic missile, and you know. You can't just have people firing off ballistic missiles without some sort of government oversight.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. So, cool. So, want to hear a little rumor?
Yeah.
All right. So, this is a little rumor, pretty specific for a rumor, but Office for the iPad launching November 10th.
Wow,
Dun
that is
dun
very
dun.
specific. How do they, does it, November 10th, really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's like
That's too
this dude has.
specific to be true.
You think?
Well, yeah. I mean, do you know how many months out we're talking?
Well, that can be just the internal released aim. It's a rumor. I think that's why it's a rumor. I think what it talks to is it just talks to this idea that that Microsoft is working on it and they do have an ideal launch date. I
Cool.
agree. I don't think it'll. Yeah, so it's just kind of a what's interesting about it is that if November 10th is true, it's after the Metro launch. So they want Metro to launch, they want to get their tablets out there,
Fair
they want
enough.
to get all that attention and then launch the iPad. So
That totally makes sense to me. That's what I would do.
yeah. Me too. Makes sense. So keep an eye out.
So, the rumor mill is that Apple's gonna switch to a new, map system, and they're gonna
The rumor,
officially,
it's like actually happening.
Well, they haven't said anything, and everyone thinks that they're gonna say it at the WWDC. So Google is holding their own little map event. It says the next dimension of Google Maps is Wednesday, June 6th, this week. It's an invitation only press gathering. Did you get your invite?
I did not.
Oh, weird.
Unfortunately, but yeah, I'll bet you got one because you always get the cool Google stuff, and
I
I never
do.
get any of it.
So this Brian guy, who happens to be the VP of Google Maps and Google Earth, will give a behind-the-scenes look at Google Maps and share our vision. We'll also demo some of the newest technology and provide a sneak peek at upcoming features that will help people get where they want to go, both physically and virtually. We hope to see you there.
That's super lame. So basically what this is they realize that they're going to lose Apple as one of their biggest company customers.
Uh-huh.
So they're just trying to be jerks and be jerks. Like Apple doesn't do this like 9 times out of 10 other companies, but it stinks a little bit of desperation. That's all I'm getting at.
Well, it's like, just it like doesn't... come to this sneak peek behind the scenes of pure vaporware.
Yeah, I don't exactly. Know.
Maybe they will, but it's.
It'll be interesting to see if they have like it's just such a that's such an out of character thing for Google to do. Like, yeah, maybe you talk about the I/O conference, but this is so clearly just a way to get people's attention, start the conversation, and set the tempo of the conversation.
Do you
before
know how
Apple's
bad this is going to backfire on them?
Oh, it's going to be terrible. That's
because,
what I'm thinking.
Well,
like,
what they're going to do is they're going to start the conversation. Walking into the developer conference. And if the Apple guys are smart, which they generally are, they're going to use whatever Google says to on, you know, whatever that Wednesday to say, okay, you know, this is actually launching. We have this today. And they'll just, unless it's just like mind blowing, amazing.
Unless it's something truly unique and awesome, and they've just had this in their sleeve and they've just been waiting for the right time to
but they don't do that
unload
either.
It, and they're like a couple months from launch. Yeah, exactly. This is so uncharacteristically Google that it just reeks of they're freaking out because they're about to lose their biggest company.
Which I don't know why they are, because all they should be doing is saying, fine, we'll make our own Maps app. And we'll release it on the store, and we'll have turn-by-turn navigation, and that'll kill whatever Apple's chances were. Maybe. I don't know. It's funny. That's all.
It's very funny. It'll be fun to talk about it next Sunday, I think, especially because I think the Maps is going to be one of the killer features, quote-unquote, of iOS 6. That's people seem to be gearing up for that to be the new big thing.
Yeah, so. Which I think it will be okay. I don't think it'll be like blow your mind awesome. I think it'll just be like it's a map.
Sure. You say that now, but you know, if Tim Cook has learned anything from because you think about what is Siri other than it's like it's voice recognition software that interacts with some of your apps. Like, it sounds totally lame when you say it like that. But when Steve Jobs stands up and talks about it, you're like, it's the coolest thing ever.
Siri, are you lame?
I respect you.
That's good.
Well, that's awesome. Anyways.
Touché.
Yeah. Touché. Thank you.
So, Matthew, I'm going to give you a choice of one of these two articles you get to talk about because we're hitting the 2-hour time wall.
Uh-oh.
Unless both of them are just so absolutely amazing that you're like, I can't choose, I have to do both.
It's actually pretty easy. I was already thinking about skipping the last one.
Perfect.
Just kind of a short follow-up.
The mystery article. The bug everybody. What could it have been?
Yeah. Basically, Ping failed. Big surprise.
Done.
The other
over there?
One was...
You had an earthquake?
A little bit. I'm not exactly sure. I moved something and things are collapsing, so hopefully they're done for now. So basically this is what happened. Nokia, we talked about this last week, got really in depth with it. Nokia came to the big conversation table. We got this new SIM card. It's awesome. One of the things they didn't talk about in the article that I thought could have been important to mention is that Nokia owns a bunch of the patents that's required for any manufacturers to make SIM cards, and their like big threat that they came to the table with was, if you don't go with our design, we won't license these patents, and then nobody can make any SIM cards. So
sweet.
Make your decision. And then everybody still decided to go with Apple. So Nokia, like we said last week, they ended up just kind of walking away from the table, not making any conversation. Didn't have anything to say, pretty upset, obviously. This week they came out and said, okay, the new nano SIM card, it's clearly inferior to our design. Like, it's awful. But since there was like broad consensus and everybody's going to go with the other one, I guess we'll license our patent so that other manufacturers can actually make these, and not everybody will be super upset with us. But pretty funny, just kind of a one more shot at Nokia's pride. They had to bend to the will of Apple. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. So, anything else going on in your life?
Oh, not too much, not too much. Just working on some websites, helping some friends out.
Cool.
Nothing too crazy though. What about you?
I assembled a trailer this weekend. That was what I did. Bought one of
Nice.
those, cheapy trailers that come in two boxes and you got to put it together yourself. And yeah, it was quite the task. I'm not actually done yet. I've done like 99% of it. I got to wire it up, and then there's a bunch of things I want to change slash improve on it to make it a little more sturdy. So
Yeah.
that's what I did. I was outside, got some sun, did some physical labor.
Cool.
Yeah, it was different for me. I got soft hands.
Man, working on the computer all day.
Yeah.
I feel you. Cool.
Cool. All right, well, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. I wasn't recording. I'm going to assume we're good now. All right, we're good. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's try this again.